You are listening to a podcast from The National.
It was a satisfying weekend for the Premier League's heavyweights, with Tottenham, Chelsea, the Manchester clubs and Liverpool all collecting wins. We'll be discussing the latest from the Premier League, focusing on the form of the strikers. We'll then be looking ahead to this week's UEFA Champions League action. This is the Extra Time podcast. I'm your host, John Turner. Joining me on the show this week, sports reporter John McCauley. John, how you doing, mate?
Very well, Johnny. How are you?
Not too bad at all, thanks. Not too bad. And deputy sports editor, Steve Luckings. Steve, how are you today, mate?
All good, mate. All good.
Right, gentlemen, I'd really like to, as I said, it's been a weekend of really kind of satisfying stuff for the big clubs in the league. And all their strikers were in the goals. That's going to kind of please everyone. Plenty of fantasy points picked up as well this weekend. I'd really like to start with the early game, the London Derby. Harry Kane is loving scoring away from home at the moment. Steve, let's start with you. What are your kind of takeaways from that game, his performance?
I just thought it was another superb performance in another London Derby against West Ham. It's a team that he really enjoys playing against. You know, he could quite easily have come away with four goals. Obviously, he had two efforts that hit the woodwork, and he was superb. And, you know, me and Colts were discussing just before we come on air the pass that Dele Alli supplied for him for the first goal. I actually thought it was a terrible pass. We both did. And Harry Kane turned it into a magnificent goal with a diving header. We talk about strikers and their attributes. We never talk about their neuron skills, like the reaction time that he's got to maneuver his body into that position and get his angles right is phenomenal. It was a phenomenal performance, and he really actually deserved more than his two goals.
I thought it was quite interesting. Pochettino after was gushing in his praise. He said he loved him, which is a departure from usually just trying to play it down. And it shows you, I think, he would be the manager's kind of dream, wouldn't he? The fact that it's someone who you know he's going to give you 100% every time he's on the pitch. He probably is exactly the same in training around the club. You could tell as well he's the kind of go-to guy on the pitch for any of the other teammates whenever they're looking for someone to give them a bit of a lift. Obviously, Lloris is captain, but he's goalkeeper. So I think he embodies everything that Pochettino wants in his team. And I think the stat was, is it 82 goals in 122 Premier League games, and I think only Alan Shearer's got to that mark before that. I know it's an arbitrary number, but it's what Kane's on. It's 82, and he's there ahead of the likes of Van Nistelrooy and Aguero and Henry, and they're genuine Premier League greats. So it just shows you exactly what he's churning out week in, week out.
Yeah, it shows you what level he's at, and he can do the lot. Obviously, he scored with a fantastic header, right foot, left foot, leads the line. He gets in behind defences. And you back him. You back him any chance that presents itself to him. You always fancy him to score at least once in a game nowadays, other than at Wembley, it would seem.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. He's torn apart Dortmund at Wembley. It's time to start doing it against Premier League teams at Wembley.
Absolutely, mate. But again, I know I've harped on about it time and time again. I actually don't think Spurs have played terrible in any of their games at Wembley. And I think on kinder days, if the stars had aligned a little bit better for them, then we would be talking about a team at the top of the table with Manchester City and United.
Arguably the standout striker of the weekend, though, guys, came the Chelsea-Stoke City game. Alvaro Morata, he's already shown what he's capable of so far with plenty of headed goals and headed assists, but he did the business with his feet this week, hat-trick. The second goal was magnificent. He's proving a real signing, a real player for Chelsea.
Yeah, Costa who?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what was impressive, not only the three goals, but his hold-up play, which is something that maybe has been a criticism that's been levelled at him, or there's been a question mark that maybe he couldn't do that and do what Costa had done the past couple of seasons for Chelsea. But his hold-up play was very, very good against Stoke. And as you said, that second goal, as he raced away from the defender and then the finish, was superb. And it just showed you the other side to his game. You know, you pointed to it there. It was, what was it, three headed goals were before this. But yeah, he just looks as if he settled so quickly there, and he looks as if he's going to grow into that team even more, especially, as I've said before, about Hazard coming back and Pedro and Willian.
every time I watch him, he impresses me more and more. Now, you know, we've waxed lyrical about his heading ability, his hang time in the air. But that Stoke game, and let's, you know, let's not sugarcoat it. Stoke were, they finished the game without any recognised centre-backs. They were severely depleted. Darren Fletcher ended up playing in the centre of that defence after Indy's Martin went off. But, and again, but that just adds another layer to Morata's repertoire, because he recognised Fletcher was most definitely the weakest link in what was already a shorn defence. Played on his shoulder the whole time, absolutely gave him the most torrid afternoon of Darren Fletcher's very long and illustrious career. But yeah, even for the first goal, that, you know, strikers, you can look down the ages. You know, Theo Walcott is one player who will always play at a top level because of his speed, but he's never had that real intelligence of bending and arcing his runs. And the way Morata arced his run for the first goal was exemplary. That's what brilliant strikers do. And again, for the second goal, you know, just the way he raced away. Every time I watch him, I see more to his game that I didn't see the previous week. He's such a talented player, and it's now becoming very obvious why Chelsea were happy to make him their record transfer signing.
I think the knock-on effect from the first goal as well is, you remember they're playing Stoke at home, and Arsenal and Manchester United have had serious problems there, so there were question marks. I know, as you said, that Stoke were heavily depleted at the back, but there were still some question marks about whether or not Chelsea would go up there and be able to grind out a result as they have done seasons previously. Excuse me. So he really just alleviated all that pressure straight off, you know, by scoring, what was it, the first minute or within 2 minutes anyway?
Was it the second quickest this season?
Is that right?
And when he's got, you know, a playmaker in Cesar Azpilicueta.
Well, that was going to be my next point. But all of Chelsea's creative brilliance with Fabregas and Hazard, you know, making his way back, Willian, Pedro.
It came down to Dave.
Yeah, Dave the centre-back is the guy that's been, he's created four of his goals.
Four of his goals, that's amazing. Phenomenal. But, you know, and he's a player that I know you admire as well. It seems he's not content with being the best player in his own position. He wants to be the best player in other positions. Left-back, right-back, right-sided centre-back, and now a number 10/playmaker. Yeah, it's a wonderful understanding they've struck up.
There's a wonderful quote from Mourinho a few years ago when he was at Chelsea, wasn't there? And he said, if I had 10 Azpilicuetas, I'd win the Champions League.
Might not score many goals.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think it was all about the work rate and the commitment and the consistency. But yeah, shows kind of how highly he's kind of thought of.
Yeah.
Lots of fireworks from Kane and Morata this weekend, but Lukaku was again on the score sheet for Manchester United. A 1-0 win at Southampton. Plenty of the, you know, as I said, the headlines might have gone to Kane and Morata, but this guy just doesn't stop scoring, does he? Another important winner. United still on points, joint top of the league, still ticking along very nicely, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the best thing to do is to compare how United might have fared in a game. And don't get me wrong, Southampton played brilliantly. I thought they were very, very hard done by not to come away with at least a point. It was the first time United have really been tested. You know, especially the last 20 minutes, they were, you know, really on the back foot. But yeah, if we compare to last season, that is a game quite easily that United may have drawn. They needed that flat track bully, as it were, and they've got it in Lukaku. He was presented with one chance. All right, he took two bites of the cherry. Fraser Foster saved the first headed attempt. But yeah, it's... You know, when you look back over the course of the season, them goals are going to be, potential title deciders, really. And, he is doing the business. I think, what is it, 9 goals in 11 club and 11 games for club and country this season. Yeah, he's a goal scorer. I don't think he's the all-round player of a Harry Kane or of a Sergio Aguero, but, you know, he's the best players... You know, highlight their strengths and mask their weaknesses, and that's exactly what he's doing in this United team.
As you said, Steve, he's doing exactly what he was brought in to do, and it was change those, was it 15 draws last year in the league, was it, into victories, or the majority of them into victories, and Mourinho he's been very shrewd in making sure that he got somebody with real Premier League pedigree who that you can rely on whenever you need a goal in the last 10 minutes or in the last 20 minutes, whatever, of a game. And he's just someone that there weren't going to be too many question marks whenever he came in. I know initially the fee looked pretty significant for any sort of player. But then as the summer developed, it really looks like it's not that bad a price to pay for someone of his quality and of his output. So I think he's just the perfect player for United. And he's, again, a bit like Morata. He's settled very, very well, very quickly with his new teammates. And he looks to be enjoying playing with them.
And do we know what that goal represented, other than 3 points, obviously, for United?
No, what's that?
Lukaku became the first player to score for three different teams at St Mary's Stadium against Southampton.
All right.
Well, very good.
Thank you. Up to stats.
Have Manchester United played any big teams yet so far this season? This is what my question was that he's doing what he's been brought in to do, and that's to convert those frustrating draws that they had last season into wins against the likes of Southampton. Be interesting to see how he fares in big games in the Champions League against the other big teams in the Premier League, because he did struggle to score against those sort of teams. Granted, he was in a weaker team. Chances would have been more infrequent, but that's where it'll be very interesting.
Yeah, I think their fixture list, something like the first eight up until the next international break, was by far the most favourable of all the top teams. And you think, like we said, they've gone through West Ham, Everton, Southampton, and they've done what the swashbuckling United teams of our younger days under Ferguson used to do. They've just completely blown these teams out of the water. And yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting, I think, when Ibrahimovic is available and how he takes to playing second fiddle to Lukaku. Because I think he has to, doesn't he? I think the way United are set up now, they're just all pace, all power. You know, the precise 10, 15-yard passes that really do unlock defences rather than these 60-yard raking passes that are, once in a match at best. And they play to Lukaku's strengths. He's a bulldozing, big, strong, running, powerful attacker. And his conversion rate is very good. I think, like I said, he does have massive holes in his stand-up game, I think. But in a team like United, those weaknesses are not shown. Whereas at Everton, where you need to keep hold of the ball, need to give your defence a breather, those weaknesses, a spotlight is shone on them a lot more. But United, where they do dominate and they have big periods of possession, they're not.
Steve Dindra. I think Ibrahimovic does change the whole dynamic. Maybe even in the dressing room. I know that everybody really looks up to him and admires him there, apparently. But I would say that one thing that's kind of going to negate the problem of having Ibrahimovic back, even though that's a very nice problem to have, is that they've not only had a favourable draw in the league, but in the Champions League as well. So that you would imagine United will be getting into the knockout stages, and that's where someone of Ibrahimovic's standing and stature would really help in that, especially if Lukaku's not doing it on that stage, which up until this point he hasn't really proven that he can do that.
No, but and I think we said in first podcast of the season, didn't we? Like he Mourinho signed him to win the Premier League, and it looks a very shrewd signing at the moment.
They're big rivals for the Premier League and in the city of Manchester. They're going along very nicely, aren't they, with another walloping this weekend and another goal for Sergio Aguero. So continuing our theme of the kind of lead strikers. He's, what, is it two goals away now from the all-time record, Cooks? You did a piece on it the other day.
Yeah, I think it is. He's one away. So
he's one away now, isn't he?
Two away from breaking it. It's just another week where he wasn't even the star performer for City this week, but it just shows you the array of attacking talent that they have that you can look at Aguero and think that he kind of took a back seat for a change. But he's still dependable. He's still, for me, he's one of the most enjoyable strikers to watch in Premier League history. As we spoke about last week, just the fact that he can conjure something out of nothing if he wants to, or else he can be the poacher in the box and finishing whoever's supplying, whether you've got Sané or De Bruyne or Silva, whoever else is that they've got there, is just absolutely ridiculous. So I would say that...
I think he's the best of the lot.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I agree.
I think a lot of the work that he does outside the box, as you alluded to, Cokes, goes very unnoticed. I think he's a very good player. I don't think he's just the finisher, which, by the way, he is by far the best finisher in the Premier League, and I do put him above Harry Kane in that bracket. But yeah, I think that was the City became the first team to score five or more goals in three consecutive Premier League games. Leroy Sané, yeah, if we're talking about finishers, Leroy Sané, he scored five goals from his first eight shots on target this mm-hmm. season. And you think he's not even considered a starter under Guardiola. Yeah. I thought Sterling looked really sharp in that game as well. But yeah, Aguero, just the positions he takes up, you know, it's so hard. A struggling defence like Crystal Palace was always going to struggle no matter who City put on the pitch. And obviously Gabriel Jesus didn't even get game time, but I'm sure once they saw Aguero would be starting that game, like their day just didn't get any easier at that news. They knew that they were going to be severely under the cosh. And he scored actually probably a very tame goal, you know, with the one goal guaranteed to go past Wayne Hennessy is one that you hit straight at him. And that's exactly what happened with a very weak header from Aguero. But yeah, he's such a fantastic striker, and I'm sure even neutral fans are rooting for him to break this 78-year-old goal-scoring record at Manchester City.
We've spoken about the lead strikers for the kind of leading team so far. But there's one team that we're not talking about and their new club record lead striker, and that's Arsenal and Alexandre Lacazette. He's started okay. He's got a couple of goals, but do you think him not catching fire quite the same way as Morata has, you know, or the way Kane's picked up since his August hoodoo's over, and Lukaku's constantly scoring goals, Aguero, of course. How much of a part do you think that's played in Arsenal's kind of stuttering start to the season?
Well, it is magnified by that, isn't it? The fact that these other strikers that you mentioned have begun in such blistering form. But like I said, I like what I see of him when he's presented with a chance at goal. I think he's got a vicious left foot on him, and I think he would definitely finish the season with a very healthy return of goals. But for me, I've not seen enough of him in the build-up. He doesn't really look like he does too much outside of the penalty area when we're talking about players like Kane and Aguero, who are, you know, integral to the build-up in a goal. But yeah, I think, you know, again, it's very early days. He's a foreign player playing in his first Premier League season. I don't think he's acquitted himself too badly. I think he's doing okay. He just happens to be playing in this era where we've got strikers who are battling it out after five games of the season.
I was thinking that maybe criticism of him would be a little bit unfair because he is new to the league. I know Morata is as well, but three of the other four that we've mentioned have all been in the Premier League for years now. So he's just arrived. He's getting used to the new team. He hasn't had Sanchez beside him or alongside him for the majority of that time. And you would imagine once they click, and if the problem with Lacazette is that he doesn't create stuff of his own making, that you would think that Sanchez certainly would do that. And you've got to remember, Arsenal have got about 15,000 midfielders. So you think that they should be able to provide the tools for him to score. So I think it's still a little bit too early to judge him. I think his goal against Bournemouth was an absolutely brilliant finish just from the edge of the box. So you know he's definitely got talent. And I think it's just a matter of time and a little bit of patience to see what he can actually bring to Arsenal.
He had a goal ruled out against Stoke, which was very, very harsh as well, which obviously could have, you know, set in a chain of events in motion where we're talking about him as one of the top scorers as well. But, you know, I don't think Arsenal have really set the place alight so far this season. So obviously if you're in a team that's not playing particularly well and the expectation is on you to get this team out of trouble, that just adds to the pressure on him. But yeah, I certainly think he will come good. Like I said, there's elements of his game. I think he's finishing when, you know, half a chance that, you know, he's as good a striker of the ball as any of the other players we've mentioned.
We've discussed the strikers from the big clubs, guys. Are there any other strikers in the Premier League that have caught your eye so far this season?
I don't know so much about caught the eye, but one player that I'm very pleased for at the moment is Omar Niasse at Everton. I mean, yeah, it's well documented that Koeman was not a fan of a player he inherited from the previous manager, Roberto Martinez. Didn't even have a locker room. You know, Everton's training camp was loaned out to Hull City last season, but he came on against Bournemouth and was the difference maker. You know, Everton trailed in that game 1-0, It's been a very poor run of form for Everton the last couple of results, and they really needed a win there at home. And he came on, made the difference, scored two goals, and his teammates seemed very thrilled for him that he had scored. And Koeman was very diplomatic in his appraisal of his performance afterwards as well. So hopefully that can be a kickstart for him to go on to better things in the Premier League.
Yeah, and I think, as you touched upon it earlier, Steve, with the Okazaki at Leicester has got three goals, I think, so far. Yeah. And he's
just very busy. Yeah. I really like him. He's fantastic in the air for such a short player as well.
But someone you know exactly what you're going to get. And that used to be, what was it, 60 minutes? And then that was his time up. You know, he was guaranteed to give you that every week under Ranieri. So he's definitely been doing well for Leicester, as Vardy has, but I think Vardy scored a couple of penalties in his three goals. And then
he missed one as well, didn't he?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. You think he would change his approach or his style. And then another one would be Javier Hernandez. I know he's only scored three goals, but I wanted to reference him because West Ham need him. They've only scored four goals in all, I think, in the Premier League. So they need him to really start firing and keep firing. He got one against Spurs at the weekend, and then he scored two at Southampton, was it?
His head lifted after he scored that goal against West Ham. You could see he had the fire in his belly then. I actually wrote a piece last week about not criticising him, but saying how Andy Carroll coming back into the team had actually hindered him. It kind of shoved him a little bit further to the left and to the right with Arnautovic suspended. But playing him through the middle, he's definitely a threat. He's a class act, and that's where West Ham needs to play him.
Yeah, and he's always busy, isn't he? Like Okazaki, and you know, because he's been at United, he's a winner, and you can tell that because he kind of takes a lot on his shoulders during the game against Spurs at the weekend. He was very vocal, and he was one of the guys that was trying to drive everybody on and pick them up on the pitch. So he's going to be vital going forward for them.
Yeah.
Which striker would you have in your team?
Of the top four that we've mentioned?
Yeah.
Aguero. It's always been Aguero. I know it's very easy to say after, you know, the performance against Watford and the goal against Palace, but it's always been Aguero for me.
Can we have all four? Can't they in midfield? That's sort of all right. I would probably say Aguero as well, just because I think he's the most dependable. I don't think Kane's too far behind.
Interesting.
You?
Probably Alvaro Morata.
Yeah.
Shiny new object syndrome, I think.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's exciting having a new kid in school, isn't it? I think it's like that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like we said, it's nice to see a new player to the Premier League doing so well. You know, he's let's not forget, he's a very young lad as well. Obviously played for two of the biggest clubs in the world and now at Chelsea. he's doing very well. Already looks not a bargain, obviously, because it's massive amounts of money, but in today's current market climate, he looks fantastic value for money.
We'll get back to football in just a second, but first we'd like to tell you about the other podcasts from The National. Beyond the Headlines takes a deeper dive into the biggest news from the week with a distinct Middle Eastern point of view, and Business Extra is the best source in the region to learn more about the figures who make the region such an important hub in the world. Subscribe to both shows, as well as Extra Time on iTunes. And as always, we're online at thenational.ae. Let's look ahead to this week's UEFA Champions League action then, guys. On Tuesday, Liverpool are travelling to Spartak Moscow. Probably won't keep a clean sheet there. Man City are at home to Shakhtar Donetsk. I don't imagine Guardiola's team having too many problems with that one. But the big game on Tuesday, Borussia Dortmund against a surprisingly struggling Real Madrid.
Well, they did win at the weekend, didn't they, to stop the rot.
Yeah, just.
Just about. But yeah, in Dortmund, they're up against a team on fire at the moment. Five wins, one draw from six games, 19 goals scored, one conceded. I mean, yeah, they look on fire. Even in the defeat to Tottenham in their Champions League opener, it was such a cracking game. They could quite easily have come away with at least a point in that game. A couple of legit goals, you would think, ruled out for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Did he score a hat-trick at the weekend again as well?
I'm nearly sure he did, yeah.
Yeah.
6-0, wasn't it? 6-1, yeah. 6-1, sorry.
So, yeah, all of a sudden you look at that game, you fancy Dortmund to maybe take points off of Madrid.
There's never an ideal time to play a Real Madrid, but if there is one, this is probably about as good as it gets, doesn't it? I mean, at the moment, they're fifth in the table. Again, it's very early days, but fifth in the table. They've lost at home 1-0 quite recently. It's just not clicking for them at the moment, is it?
No, it's not. And I think as well that they will always give you a chance. I know that, you know, they're the two-time defending champions, but they will always give you a chance, and especially against a Dortmund team, as Steve-O mentioned there, that are packed full of attacking intent and talent. I think all's not right there at the moment, and the fact that I think that's been exacerbated by the fact Barcelona have started so well this season. So I think that kind of plays into it, that they're already playing serious catch up in the league, despite the fact it being quite early on in the season. But I think this is a perfect time for Dortmund to play them. Dortmund are slowly getting players back that they didn't have against Tottenham a couple of weeks ago, and Real Madrid have a real serious test on their hands. I would really fancy Dortmund to get a win in this one.
It's the first real blip of Zidane's short and very illustrious managerial career. It'd be interesting to see how he kind of deals with this, because he's never really faced anything like this before. I mean, you don't really deal with too many ruts when you're at Real Madrid, do you?
No, but again, whether you deliver the Champions League or you don't, it doesn't assure you your job for the following season. But yeah, I mean, you know, what was it? Was it 73 or 74 consecutive games they'd scored in? And, you know, the longer those types of records go on, the quicker they'll come to an end. So it was obviously going to happen for them at some point. But obviously they've got Ronaldo back from suspension now. That's obviously a massive plus. And you've only got to look at that side to know that they're not going to have a season of struggle. Luka Modric, Isco, Gareth Bale. You know, they're just so jam-packed full of world-class quality players. It's a rut, but it's not one that's going to last for very long, I don't think.
I think you would still fancy themselves in Dortmund, you would still fancy Real Madrid to go through that group. I think it's the same as what it was whenever the draw came out. You would think that Tottenham and Dortmund are going to fight it out for those other two.
Yeah, the head-to-head between them is going to decide who goes through with Madrid. I agree with you on that. Mm.
Let's look ahead to the Wednesday games. There's a game in Paris that's going on that should be very interesting indeed. PSG are taking on Bayern Munich. Ian Hawkey did a really interesting piece or a section on his talking points this week about FC Hollywood, the tag that was normally associated to Bayern Munich in the late 90s. He's now saying that because of the Cavani-Neymar fallout over the penalty, that should now apply to PSG. I mean, there's going to be an awful lot of egos playing on in Paris on Wednesday night. That should be a cracking game.
Yeah, and there's one guy that isn't playing is Neuer in goal for Munich, and he's obviously very, very important to their chances of defending well and keeping a clean sheet and allowing the guys up front to go and win the match for them. Sven Ulrich should be playing in his place, and he made a massive mistake on Friday night, I think it was, against Wolfsburg.
It was a stinker, wasn't it?
Horrendous. And I think...
Don't pull your punches, mate.
It was one of those awful goalkeeper mistakes you'll see all year.
Yeah, shot straight at him, they just kind of flapped that free kick, should I say. But
was it Wayne Hennessy, Ingo?
So I think they're going to be under the cosh, despite through all the unrest that's going on over guys taking penalties and basically, you know, who's...
Do you not think that's quickly worked out, like, in that moment, almost? Like, I don't think there's ever any lingering fallout from that, is there?
But you're talking about Neymar, aren't you? There could be, couldn't there? You see the reports today. I mean, these kind of things are very easy to fabricate, but that Cavani had been offered €1 million by PSG to relinquish penalty duties. <Yeah. laughs>
That's probably a day's wages as well.
Yeah, that's true.
But, yeah, I obviously, we're not in that PSG dressing room. But, yeah, I think in that moment, you know, there was certainly some hostilities on both parties. But, yeah, no, I don't think that's carried on. I think they'll probably have a few words to say to each other after the match. But I'd be very surprised if it's still an issue now. If there's a penalty awarded in that game, I imagine whoever wins that penalty, Cavani or Neymar, whatever, will step up and take it. Otherwise, Cavani will probably take €1 million not to take the penalty.
From a PSG and Neymar perspective, these are the kind of games that they expect them to win now, don't they? Well, after you spend £222 million on a footballer, this is the stage. These are the kind of teams that you should be competing against at home.
Well, it's where they want to be, isn't it? That's why they spent so much money. Is what they're geared up to do, to be amongst that European elite, to try and win the European Cup for the first time. So it will be a good measure. You know, obviously the game against Celtic was a stroll in the park for PSG, if we're brutally honest. But yeah, but Bayern Munich is a much better measure of where that squad's at.
It's a very, very good test of that front three, because we're forgetting about Mbappe there as well, that they spent an incredible amount of money on, or they will whenever the loan turns into a permanent move. So it's the first real big test for those three and for this new PSG. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Another big game on Wednesday. There's going to be lots of reunions at Atletico Madrid's new stadium. The name escapes me. I was going to try. But yeah, Chelsea...
The Metropolitan.
Chelsea are in the Spanish capital. Fernando Torres will be there. Diego Costa will be in the crowds. Felipe Luis. Obviously, Thibaut Courtois spent a couple of seasons on loan at Atletico Madrid. It'll be a really nice, interesting test for Chelsea, because they, you know, stormed to the Premier League title last year without European football. They look a good, solid team, but they haven't tested themselves against any quality continental opponents yet.
No, absolutely. And, you know, none are more gritty and dogged, determined opponents in the Champions League than Atletico. You know, obviously, is it finalists in two of the past three seasons? Again, you know, we talked about PSG v Bayern being a good measure of where both squads are at. Yeah, this is what you think of when you think of the Champions League. No disrespect to the likes of teams like Apel Nicosia and Karabakh, but you want to see, you know, blockbuster games against the biggest teams in each division, and Atletico v Chelsea is certainly ticks all the boxes in that regard.
I think it'd be just as interesting what goes on the touchline as well. You know, you've got Conte and Simeone, which they're not exactly two shrinking violets. So. So that should be good to see how the tactical battle plays out. And then just to touch on somebody else here, you've got Morata is going back to the old arch rivals.
Of course.
So that's going to be an incredibly hostile atmosphere. And that's a very, very big test of his transition to Chelsea, just to see if he can do it against, as everyone knows, one of the best defences and one of the sternest and probably most cunning defences in Europe.
Yeah, I still think Chelsea are not quite as formidable at the back as they were. I still think there's, you know, like Gary Cahill doesn't seem the commanding presence that he was last season. So I think it'll be a big test for their defence as well in this game.
Excellent stuff, chaps. So that's all we've got time for this week. Thanks for stopping by the studio.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, Johnny.
Well, you can subscribe to the Extra Time podcast on iTunes and find us on the website at thenational.ae. Thanks for listening.